The weather in Central Ohio just got better, and so should your loan rate. CME Federal Credit Union wants to try to beat your current loan rate by 2% on autos and toys. Plus, enjoy no payments for 90 days on car loans and no payments for 60 days on motorcycles, boats, and more. With car rates as low as 4.9% APR and toy rates starting at 6.5% APR, it's the perfect time to save. Apply today at cmefcu.org. Terms apply. Minimum floor rates 4.99% APR cars, 6.5% APR other vehicles. Federally insured by NCUA.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
We're talking about ADHD and how does that impact relationships? How can couples navigate it though? We've been talking about an ADHD diagnosis all this week on the programme. Dr. Jessica McKnight, Senior Counselling Psychologist, is with me here on the line today. Jessica, does ADHD create different dynamics in relationships?
So it has massive impacts. I suppose the first thing I always say to people is that when someone is neurodivergent, so when they have ADHD, they see the world and they experience themselves, other people and the world differently than a neurotypical person. So I suppose it's really important that a neurotypical person doesn't put neurotypical standards or expectations on a neurodivergent person. In ADHD, it really affects all different ways of functioning. So emotionally, cognitively, behaviorally. So for instance, emotionally, people with ADHD can experience emotions far more deeply, far more intensely. They might find themselves getting dysregulated more easily. So that could be feeling like they go from 0 to 100 and kind of don't know how they got there. They can also experience something called rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is basically, I suppose, a real sensitivity to perceived rejection or criticism, or actual rejection or criticism. So you can imagine then having that feeling and how much that would impact you then on a daily basis. So I suppose that would be emotionally how people are impacted. And like, look, I know we don't have much time, so I'm really kind of giving you an overview. And then cognitively, we talk about kind of executive functioning differences. So I suppose people with ADHD can be prone to black and white thinking. So things are all good or all bad. Things are perfect or terrible. And also things like, you know, feeling quite inattentive, you know, lack of focus, finding it hard to concentrate. And I suppose, Andrea, where people run into trouble then in relationships, especially if they have a neurotypical partner, it's that they're perceived then as being lazy, as not being conscientious, as not caring, when actually we know really that neurodivergent people tend to put in more effort than neurotypical person does, but it's still not enough because their brains inherently work differently. And I suppose, again, in relationships with a neurotypical person, things can happen like someone with ADHD is very creative. They might have lots of different ideas. But what can happen is we can jump from one idea to another. We can start a project and not finish it. So that can be quite overwhelming for a neurotypical partner, especially if they have other obligations, like they have kids and you're here thinking, I think I'm going to paint the kitchen this morning, you know, and then not being able to follow through. And I suppose the other big piece then would be around impulsivity. And I suppose it's important to remember that ADHD can come in different forms. So people can have one of three types, so the inattentive type, the hyperactive impulsive type, or the combined type. So when people are more impulsive, they can be then seen as maybe careless or selfish. And they might be doing things like seeking novelty, seeking different sensations. And again, that might not fit with kind of the humdrum of everyday life where you have obligations that need to be fulfilled. And things like frustration tolerance, like really struggling with tolerating frustration and being impatient, they can also have impacts, I suppose, on relationships.
I can imagine for people listening today, Jessica, you know, maybe they're identifying that in partners or in relationships. I mean, even with family members or with friends as well. Like, just, you know, as you describe some of the, I suppose, maybe classical kind of symptoms of ADHD in a relationship, I think we can all, you know, nearly think, God, that actually fits somebody that I know. I'm sure that must be hard for the other person in the relationship, though, maybe if there isn't an ADHD diagnosis, that they're just, maybe they're not aware of that.
Absolutely. And I suppose what can happen is, especially when there's not a diagnosis, that's when I'd often have people come in to see me for couples work. Because the partner who maybe doesn't have ADHD is feeling overwhelmed, feeling like maybe the load that they share in the relationship is is out of balance, you know, that they're doing more than their partner, and then that can breed resentment. But then for the person with ADHD, the problem is they can feel incredibly self-critical and ashamed, because in their mind, they are doing their absolute best. And I suppose that's something I really want to be clear here. There's nothing lazy or like lacking in conscientiousness in someone with ADHD. Oftentimes they're bending over backwards and it's still not enough. But I suppose when there's that breakdown in communication and there's a misunderstanding in terms of how your partner's brain works, you get stuck in these very negative kind of interaction cycles, as you can imagine.
How do you strike up a conversation with somebody who you think might have ADHD, but either they aren't aware of it or they're unwilling to accept that they might maybe require a diagnosis?
Yeah, and look, I suppose this is tricky, isn't it? Because people can have funny reactions to labels, and people can be very averse to them, and other people can actually find them a huge relief. Oftentimes what we find is there's like a bittersweet reaction. It's like, God, I'm glad I know, but actually imagine how much easier my life would have been if I'd known earlier. I suppose what I tend to do is I would tend to kind of focus on the traits, focus on the characteristics, and kind of, you know, share kind of stories. Like, do you find that, like, for instance, it's really hard to prioritize and that everything feels urgent? Or you find that you can get very impatient, or your emotions can go from 0 to 100. And then talking about, like, well, you know, when you have the clusters of these symptoms, that often equates to something like ADHD. And I suppose, again, it's to say it's not always ADHD, but we look for it when there's pervasive traits that have kind of continued from childhood. That's when we would start asking questions about it. And I suppose in adults, it's a much trickier diagnosis, in the sense that people have developed lots of ways to compensate and to mask their difficulties. So that's why we get adults that, you know, that haven't been diagnosed, you know, and then are coming maybe in their 40s and 50s, you know. But they often come, Andrea, with things like depression and anxiety, rather than actual ADHD symptoms, because this is from the effort they have put in. So I suppose it's about being very open, very non-judgmental, very neuroaffirmative around your approach to kind of talking about this. But at the same time, you also don't want to be pointing fingers and laying blame, you know?
Yeah, but I imagine then the communication is possibly more difficult then too, is it?
It can be. And I suppose what's really important is that you understand how to communicate, especially if we're talking about relationships, how to communicate with your partner. So if I'm talking about those negative interaction cycles you can get into, where people can feel blamed, people can feel criticized, you're going to do whatever you can to try and slow down the cycle. So we just talk about de-escalation. So even things like, if you're able to take a break mid-argument, if you have like a time out word, and it might sound silly, but like it is so effective.
The words cool down now kind of ring true, don't they?
And when you're in the throes of it, you
yeah,
know, when you're trying
I'm just
to
going
do
to throw this bomb in here now on top of this
yeah,
discussion.
You're trying to get to cool down or to de-escalate the conversation before you get to 100. Because to be honest, once you get to 100, you're too far gone. You know, so you want it when you feel things start to heat up. And we all know the red flags. You all know when someone's voice gets a bit tense, you know, the eye contact gets a bit funny, like people get a bit short with each other. That's when you say, do you know what? Actually, let's call this. And if you can take a break, and I know it sounds difficult, but it's like building a habit. And once you can do that, honestly, it really does bode for much more healthy kind of regulated conversations. Or else another way is also coming in and saying, look, I'd love to talk to you more about this later on, and kind of planting the idea with the person, giving them time to kind of come to terms with it, and then have a more regulated conversation later on. And I know for people that are stuck in this negative cycle that can feel incredibly hopeless and you feel like you're too far gone for this, what I'd really recommend, Andrea, is that people have a look into going to couples therapy, you know, with a neuroaffirmative therapist who can help identify the cycles and give each partner kind of space to talk. And it's not necessary that you need to be going in for years of therapy. You might need 5 or 6 sessions, and that could make a monumental difference. But I suppose the biggest thing that we see in couples work is breakdown in communication and people not listening to each other and not being able to see the other person's point of view.
What about the non-ADHD person in the relationship, in the couple? Do they,
yeah.
I mean, like, this was the impact for them. How did, do they kind of take on the, you know, a different role in parenting children?
It's interesting, actually. I thought you were going to say was, did they take on the parent role for the partner?
Because that's it. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
well, that actually is something that can come up, and I have had people say that to me, that it can end up feeling so unequal, and that their neurodivergent partner, in the neurotypical partner's view, is so unreliable that they end up feeling like the partner, feeling like the parent, and like this is another child. And I suppose that's really, for me, that would be like a red flag of like, okay, so we need to talk about this and explore this more, because how would that not breed resentment? You know, because that's not what you're in a relationship for. That's not what a romantic or intimate relationship looks like for your parent and your partner. And I suppose it's really important that, as difficult as it'll be for the ADHDer to be able to hear how hard it is for the neurotypical partner because of that rejection sensitive dysphoria, it's really important that they are able to take in what's going on from their point of view. And I honestly, like, once you have that those open lines of communication and people are honest and they're able to kind of tolerate the difficult conversations, there's huge room for progress. What I also say to people is that it's really important to understand ways to self-soothe. So for an ADHDer, they may rely on other people a lot to help them regulate. But if you can rely on yourself more to self-soothe, that means that even in those really difficult conversations, you can regulate yourself, you know?
Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. Really interesting. Dr. Jessica McKnight, Senior Counselling Psychologist. Jessica, thanks a million for joining us here on the programme.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.